This is Get Lit with Literature, and this is Monk. You can find out more at the website allbook-books.com. Today is an interview with Barbara Southard, celebrating the publication of her third book of poetry, all with All Book Books, Long Island Poems. Her first book in 2008, Remember, second book in 2020, Time and Space, which has a couple of short stories in it, and this third book, Long Island Poems. And her bio, Long Island Poems, is Barbara Southard's third book of poetry. She taught poetry for 9 years at the Walt Whitman Birthplace and has served on the board of the Long Island Poetry Collective for many years. While serving as Suffolk County Poet Laureate from 2019 to 2021 during the COVID pandemic, she helped facilitate Zoom poetry workshops along with members of the LIPC. Her recent poems reflect the love she has for the neighborhoods, woods, and the many bays, inlets, and waterways of Long Island. She lives in Miller Place, New York. And since in the interview we do touch on the native origins of Long Island, I'll mention that there are several other names. Pominock is well known, and Matuak, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, and Siwan Haki, or maybe Sawanaka, I'm not sure how to pronounce that one either. That's my personal favorite, the Shinnecock name for the island, meaning shell place. So Barbara conveys her perspective and her experiences of various towns she's visited and lived in and written about on the North Shore and the South Shore, East and West, and all around Long Island. So it's a wonderful little collection, and you'll hear more. Welcome, Barbara Southard, to Get Lit with Literature. I'm glad to have you on to talk about your new book of poems titled Long Island Poems. And this is your third book that with All Book Books. So I'm wondering how that feels over the span of 14 years.
Well, it's a good feeling, Monk. It took me a while to get to this third book, and yeah, it feels good, and I'm all ready to do a fourth.
Oh, wow, that's good. I always like when writers are on to the next thing instead of dwelling on the current one. Yeah. The first off, I realized after working on the book for a while, there's a wonderful cover photo which you took, and I wondered if you could explain a little bit. Because you grew up in Freeport on a canal, so I wonder if there's a connection, but you can probably describe it better. But the book, it's this beautifully kind of misty sky, and there's a man, it looks like a man with a jacket with a hood on his head holding some kind of pole, and it's a small boat with an umbrella, but I don't know what kind of boat or anything, so maybe you could explain some of that.
Yes, well, I grew up on the South Shore, which has a lot of clamming, but I ended up on the North Shore, and it does have clamming, a little bit less clamming, but the harbor I live close to, Mount Sinai Harbor, usually always has clammers there, summer and winter. And that particular photo I took was quite a cold day. You can tell he's wearing this heavy jacket. The water is not frozen, but it was cold enough to be getting frozen very soon. And he was moving very slowly along the shoreline, raking for clams. And the boat was an unusual boat. It was a clam boat, but he had fashioned an umbrella on top of it to keep out of the rainy mist. And I was so taken by the image. And so I took the photo and just really loved looking at that photo.
Yeah, it is nice. The water is kind of ripply, reflective in the front, but then in the back, it's one of those, the water goes into the horizon, into the sky. It's almost like they blend into one. So it's a nice.
Yes, exactly. One of those hazy days.
Yeah, it's very, very wet and moody, which fits with a lot of the poems in the book around the waters of Long Island. Maybe you could start
and read the poem Canal People.
Sure. Let me see here. Canal People. Now, this poem was a memory of childhood because I grew up on a canal, and I am forever grateful for my parents for buying a house on a canal because it meant so much to me to have the freedom I had. I would get up early in the morning and get in my little rowboat and go crabbing. And this particular poem is about the neighborhood itself. And everyone had a boat. Some had large boats, some had small boats. And we would all head out for Fire Island at times, or sometimes we just go to Zacks Bay. It's called Canal People. We carted swimsuits and board games to the dock while the mother's captain from the kitchens, counting out cans of soup, loaves of bread, boxes of Band-Aids, fresh fruit, soda, a bottle of scotch. The men counted life jackets, checked engines, then gathered on the dock to smoke, waiting for the ready-to-go signal from the women. Like a line of mallards, the boat snaked out toward the Great South Bay, past houses in the marsh, under bridges, past the lighthouse on Fire Island. A flotilla of runaways, casting troubles, shoes, school, jobs into the boat's wakes.
Very nice. Yeah, that's an example of your poems. A lot of them, one of the things I like most, or and what I think describes your poems is, I would say, your eye for detail and your love of the natural world, and also the everyday lives of people interacting with all that. Maybe you can say a little bit about if you've always had that eye for detail, and obviously you grew up on the canal, so you sort of have that feel with the water. But in general, how does all that blend to shape? Because it shapes a lot of your poems in all three books. There's always this very it's like telescopic lens that just focuses in, but it's mixed with a very flowing view, so to speak. No pun intended.
Yeah, well, painting teaches you to really observe. And for years, my main avenue for creating art was through painting and printmaking. But I have to say, it started long before that. I have very vivid visual memories, and also a great need to write things down. So the two went together. As for the natural world, it was always there for me from my earliest years. And everything that I came across fascinated me. Isn't that how all children are?
Mm-hmm.
And it still does. I've gotten old, but I am still fascinated by so many things that I discover. So, it's like the smell of salt water, the life under the surface. And isn't it interesting when you think of it that it's really the same as what you find in towns because so much is under the surface,
Yeah, I think I was telling you this summer I realized that because I'm out on the patio at night sometimes just sitting quietly looking at the stars and In my mind, I'm thinking, okay, now it's nice and quiet. Nothing's going on. And then I have a little flashlight and I notice, there's a spider or a bug or some kind of bug I've never seen before or a snail trucking across. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, there's this unseen, seemingly unseen, but it's so active. There's always something going on. So I think that's...
always something going on. That's correct.
Yeah, it's like there's always something going on, and that's the celebratory, the eye for the life and the celebratory feel that I get from your poems. And there's also like the epigraph at the beginning. Each section of the poems, they're untitled, but there's a quote or an epigraph. And I love the one you have from Winslow Homer. The sun will not rise or set without my notice and thanks.
Yeah.
Which is just, it starts the book in a reverential way, and it also reminds me, I've heard interviews with Native peoples that very much so, they'll mention the tradition of one of the first things getting up in the morning is, being thankful for the sunlight and literally going outside and whether it's a songs or prayers or just whatever, to the sun, because that's sort of, you know, starts things, or even the light in the sky if it's not sunny, but that's the source of the kind of that starts the day. And the birds, you know, the birds go along with that. So that's a nice way to start the book. And there's also, as we talked about, like with the book being Long Island Poems, I felt like I had to mentioned it in my introduction, just the acknowledgement and respect for the native peoples of Long Island, because that gets, you know, there's so many towns that are named after the natives and streets, but we tend to overlook. So I just want to read that little bit. The Dutch name for the island was, there's, I don't know why there's a T, it's like apostrophe T, but it's Lang Island, LangeEyLandt, Lang Island. Yet I would be remiss if not mentioning that native peoples have inhabited the lands and fed off of the waters and forests for 12,000 and probably more years before that. And many of those peoples are still here, finding new old ways to not simply survive but thrive. All of us, as your poem, you have a poem in the book Trees, reminds, and then you have the quote is, roots seeking the same sustenance in sandy soil. So I wanted to mention that in the context of the Long Island poems, and that again, the images, just it connects with the land and the water. So that's not so much a question, but if you wanna.
Yeah, I love that, Monk. I loved what you wrote about that. I totally agreed with that. It's so true. We have much to be thankful for, and you know, the indigenous people who live, they still here are here on Long Island, very active, doing wonderful things, you know, starting small businesses that are environmentally friendly, and this should not be forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a side note, when I drove by the Shinnecock Reservation a week or so ago, I saw a fenced-in area with piles of dirt, and I asked somebody what was going on, and it's going to be a legal cannabis place for sale. So
yeah.
The times, they are changing again.
Yeah, we are harvesting seaweed.
Oh, wow.
There's a small business out there. So there are all kinds of wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I think that ties in with the one thing I love of the overall theme of the book is the places, because it's like wherever, if I were to go be looking in a thrift store or some old bookstore and I saw a book of poems like written 20, 50, 100 years ago that was mentioned all these places of the area, I would pick it up because I would want to see what someone did or what they experienced or what, you know, what flower they described or what tree, anything. Because it's like we go to these little, there's so many towns on Long Island that we go to, and just sort of see somebody writing about them, I find very exciting, that it's, you know, everybody has their experiences. So it's kind of like a comparison to read someone's work and say, wow, I wonder if the poem is like my experience or I'm going to learn something new. So did you, when you were working on the book, did you get the idea to go to all the specific towns, or did you realize you had a bunch of poems about the towns, or did you go to each town wanting to write a poem, or did it just happen spontaneously?
It was very spontaneous. I never went to the towns like with the purpose of writing about them.
Oh, okay.
It's like where I found myself at a particular time. Of course, you know, the poems that I wrote in Freeport was simply because I grew up there. So it was my childhood. But then there were other poems that I happened to be, say, in Riverhead, and I met this man outside of John's Pancake House, and he had the most fascinating bus. And I started taking a photo of the back of his bus, and then we got into a conversation. And it came out as The Back of Charlie's Bus, which is one of the poems. And that's pretty much how all of these poems evolved, simply by meeting people. And, of course, Port Jefferson. Mm-hmm. I lived there for 6 years in the middle of town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote a great deal about the people there. But there was a writer, his Lewis Simpson,
mm-hmm.
and he was an excellent poet. And I picked up one of his books, and I had read a few of poems. He had lived in the area of Port Jefferson, and he wrote a couple of poems about Port Jefferson, and I thought, oh, that is wonderful. I just love those poems, and I think that reading his poems really influenced me that it was worthwhile to write these poems and to put them in a book.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I think it's a wonderful kind of timeless treasure. And speaking of that, I just had my finger bookmark here to the first stanza of the Port Jefferson poem, which you subtitled 1991 to 1997.
Yes.
And it starts off, "At first light, the clang of cans from the old woman rolling her shopping cart through the parking lot, a morning song of metal against metal, mixed with a staccato percussion of rolling wheels, shuffle, shuffle of her feet as she heads towards the dumpsters behind the stores." So that's another thing, like you said, you met the guy in Riverhead. That's another theme in your poems, is what I would call like sort of off the beaten path, kind of quirky characters. And I know from talking to you personally over the years, when you travel, a lot of times you tell me about going off the beaten path.
Yes.
And have this sort of fascination with, and maybe it sounds cliche, but like people on the margins of society or whatever. But maybe, yeah, talk a little bit about where your interests, I mean, I think everybody is fascinated when they see people doing something different than just getting up and going to work. But like, what's your fascination with people like that that gets into your poems?
Well, you know, I lived in the middle of town, so you would wake up in the morning and be in town. You went to bed and you were still in town. And Port Jefferson is full of people that are so interesting. First place, the town is not only the last stop on the railroad, but ferries are constantly coming in and out of the harbor. And the people I met there were the most interesting people, other than when I lived in Oregon for 4 years and I met some amazing people in Oregon. I met people who lived in their cars. They were lovely people. I got to know them. And they would tell me which spots were the safest for them or what stores would allow them to use the bathroom. They were very good at making themselves invisible. By the time most people in town were up and out the door, they had already left the parking lot where they'd been parked all night.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many, many wonderful, wonderful, amazing people I met in Riverhead.
Riverhead, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where those 6 years...
or Port Jefferson, I think you mean. Yeah, or both.
Yeah.
Port Jefferson and Riverhead, right?
Yeah, and yeah, Riverhead, there was one encounter where I was in an office building and a man came out of a door in the office building holding onto a bunch of papers. And he had such a look on his face, and he came over to me and he put the papers in my hand. And he had, it was difficult for him using the English language, but he did say... He said he had just received his ESL certificate.
And oh, yeah.
He was so joyful. And it was such a wonderful experience to have accidentally been in the hallway at the time he came out of this door with these papers that meant so much to him.
English is a second language, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Neat. Yeah. That's neat.
Yeah. So, you know. That's the world is full of amazing people and interesting people.
Truly, yeah. And speaking of the native perspective also, I remember because I've been going to, this summer I started going to Port Jefferson a lot and having coffee, walking around. It's a neat place to walk around.
Yeah.
And one day I was like, wait a second, how did they name this town? Like Thomas Jefferson maybe did some good stuff, but he also had slaves and was not very, you know, was
right.
Rough with the native people. So I was like, wait a minute, how did you get this? So I looked it up online, and it said that he gave money to the region.
Huh.
And that's, you know, obviously sort of how things happen, buildings, and they named it after him. So there's a wonderful book by, I think it's George Tooker, TOOKER. It's online. It's called Long Island Native Place Names, and it's
nice.
And that's where I learned. I'm not sure I'd pronounce it correctly, but the Setauket name for the area is Suwasset, and it mentions something about like the water coming up onto the lands. So I just found that. So now I try to use that name when I'm in town or tell people where I'm going. So, because I think that, you know, the naming is powerful, very
That's
powerful.
That's a very good name for it because, you know, the water, Port Jeff gets flooded often, you know, during storms. I was caught in one. It was pretty scary. So it does get flooded at times, yes.
Wow, yeah, that makes sense because that, you know, would have been, I think there's even a town, Hopog, which means, when I looked it up a while ago, I think it's overflowed lands from the Nisiquag River.
Oh, right.
So
right.
That's, you know, obviously a common thing, the Nile in Egypt.
Sure.
Let's see, maybe, I was going to read it, but I'd rather you read your own poem. So, yeah, I was going to read it, but can you read one long ago August morning? It's a lovely title and a good example of what we've been talking about.
Sure. Poem took me a long time to write because I wanted to get exactly how I felt when I was crabbing as a child because I had such joy crabbing. I really did. I would just go along with my net along the docks and, you know, catch crabs. And this is called One Long Ago August Morning. I eased my flat-bottom boat towards the umber-stained dock. Slid oaken oars inside, slipped over the seat to the pointed bow, searched deep into fern green algae below, swaying with the morning tide. Hidden among clusters of bone white barnacles, scattered like seed pearls against the night, I caught a flash of brilliant blue, a jimmy crab ready for flight. Prepared for his sideways scuttle with a practiced twist of my net, I cut off all chance for escape, raised him high over my head, his extended claws reaching full breadth. On the row back home to the boiling pot, his carapace glistened under late summer sun as he skittered toward shadows beneath the back seat, his stalked eyes seeing everything at once.
Yeah, I really like the last line. You get inside the, you know, seeing the world from the from that critter's perspective.
Very
poignant.
Yeah, if you ever, you know, everybody should see a blue claw crab. They are creatures of beauty. They really are. They have the most beautiful sky blue, you know, claws, and they're just amazing.
What's the name of it again? Blue what?
Blue claws.
Blue claw crab?
Yeah, blue claw crab.
All right, I'll have to look that up.
Oh, yeah, look that up and see what they look like, yeah.
Okay, and I have one more request. Because this poem, the poem Davis Peach Farm, it's like, it's wonderful to, you know, write about and appreciate the beauty of the lands and the waters of this area. And then, as sometimes we get a bit too comfortable going to the store and going to the mall, and then, you know, we lose touch with the still some of the industrialization going on. And I think that poem, Davis Farm, reflects a lot.
Yeah, I'm just looking for it.
That's page
3. Oh, I got it. Yeah, I even met Mr. Davis once at a Thanksgiving dinner and spoke to him. But the poem is called Davis Peach Farm, and it was located in two different locations, and one of them was Mount Sinai. Archer Davis planted his first peach trees in 1910, his son David taking over and planting more peach trees, people coming from all over to sink their teeth into one of those warm, ripe, dripping down your chin fruits. Life can be hard for farmers who tilled this land for generations, if not high taxes, storms blowing through. That's how the Davis Peach Farm became a densely packed housing complex for old folks, with not one living peach tree to be found not one. Nothing to show of what had once been row upon row of pink blossoming trees.
Very nice. Yeah, very poignant.
Oh, those trees were absolutely beautiful. You know, just, you know, when they bloomed, it was just a whole huge field of pink blossoms.
Yeah, that sounds so lovely. It's wonderful. We need to preserve as much of that as we can.
Oh, absolutely.
I mentioned it in the intro. The sound, like, just I encourage people to read your poems out loud because there's a definite rhythm and a sound to it, and the wording. There's a lot of I don't know the exact poetry words, but like assonance and alliteration and all that sound stuff. So, which reminds me to mention, you have a reading coming up in, I think, New York City next week. Can you give people the details of where they can go actually see you and purchase the book directly from you if they don't get it through my website or find you driving around somewhere?
Right. Let's see. It's at the Parkside. It's downtown Manhattan. It's at 4 o'clock, and it's, I think, November 20th. And that's about all I know about it. I haven't gotten into the city in a long time, so I'm a little apprehensive of it and staying close to home, except for a different, you know, traveling that we did. But I guess I'll just make that trek into the city, get out of the trees.
maybe here's a poem idea for you: Canal Girl in the City.
You're right.
So yeah, is there anything else you want to mention or another poem you had wanted to read?
No, not really. I think that the only thing is I did want to say that with the three different books that I've done with Remember and Time and Space and then Long Island Poems, there's really a thread that runs through all three books, and it's places I've been. Like in one of the books, there's the Kenai Peninsula in Alaska, or it's a poem about traveling around the country, and poems about the human condition. Like I knew some people who worked at the labor pool down in Florida, and the labor pool workers, I got to know some of them, and so I wrote a poem about them. They have a hard life. And that's about it. The most recent Long Island Poems is the only one that's a bit more regional.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the next book is going to be a bit different than these poems, but they still will address the same things: people, our environment, personal observations.
Yeah, it is like me, you know, probably unintentionally, but it the way sometimes writers have a series of books. It is. I think all three of the books there is that similarity and thread.
Yeah.
That runs through them.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite poems of all times of yours, and I would put it in my one of those poems that I top poems that I remember of anyone, is you have a poem called "The Back of Barry's Head." That's in Remember.
Right.
And it's
right.
Like something about, you know, all you remember from fifth grade is sitting behind some kid named Barry in the back of his head. I love that poem.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Do you want me to read that for you?
Oh yeah, sure. All three books are on the All Book Books website. You can purchase just the new book, Long Island Poems, and there's also a deal for all three books if anyone's interested.
Okay, that's
good. There's the sales promo.
The Back of Barry's Head. If you sit behind a boy an entire school year, even if you're only in fourth grade, the back of his head provokes all kinds of interesting observations. Like the way the sun from the window reflects off the shiny black slickness of his perfect hair, or how the back of his neck, so luminous, is covered with whirly designs of fine down, or the way he moves his shoulder in a shrug under his pressed pastel shirt, and how his elbow shakes back and forth, erasing mistakes. I can't remember what I learned that year, although I'm certain it was something useful, nor can I remember any of the girls' names I surely played with on the playground, but I remember the back of Barry's head in all its complexity, like last night's dream.
All right. Yeah, that's a wonderful poem. Makes me smile.
Thank Thank you.
And I think it too, it reflects over all your work, just, and in general, I think poets, you know, that eye for it's like there's something going on, but a lot of times poets are noticing what's not everybody else is noticing, or, you know, what's not exactly going on. You know, it could be at a concert or whatever, and most people are enjoying the concert, but, you know, the poet is writing about the sticky floor with the beer and the whatever, so it's, your poems have those eyes that remind us of what's going on while we're not paying attention, or while we're paying attention to other stuff.
Yeah, paying attention to other stuff,
so,
right?
Which is necessary in the day-to-day world, too, so.
It helps.
All right, well, thanks so much, Barbara, and, it's a wonderful, like I said, it's a wonderful collection of, poems just in and of themselves, but again, I really like that you cover so many places and the sensitivity and all the things that get through there. And I think it's an important book for people to check out, especially Long Islanders, because it's, you know, it kind of mirrors back, obviously, one person's perspective, but I think that it encourage people to maybe do their own writing about places.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Monk. And I can't tell you, I don't think I would ever want to do a book with anyone else.
Ah. thanks. All right, well, looking forward to see what you're cooking up. One of them, you have a couple short stories, too, so I have to throw that in.
Oh, yeah, that's right. In the second book, you know, the second book, I have to tell you, came about simply because, you know, after you've been writing for a long time, you get a number of work published, and then there's lists of poems that aren't published. And I needed to keep track of things. And I thought, I am going to put a collection of all the poems that were published. So Time and Space consists of poems that have been published in small journals. And that's why I put that collection together, simply so I can keep track. Mm-hmm. And I happen to have two short stories that were published, so I added those to the book.
Yeah, I can relate to that. It does, in some way, in a sort of strangely mechanical way, feel like sometimes, because I have poems in drafts and files and piles of paper, and there's like a certain comfort and satisfaction of knowing, at least there's a chunk of them that are in a book. Mm-hmm. And, like, I can find them in that book. So
yes.
Something about the organization process, aside from the arts.
Yeah, that's a big thing. It really is. Well, you could get lost in it, absolutely lost.
So it's good to, to put them in some form, you know, whether it's online or in a book, however, or just to read them. I like giving out poems when I go to the stores. Sometimes people I know, I'll just give them a poem. So, you know how it is. You want to get it out there and have somebody take a look. So.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, thanks again so much. It's wonderful talking with you.
Oh, thank you, Monk.
All righty. Take care.